Thank you, Dr. McCabe, and thank you to Natasha for organizing this great session and for speaking at APHA. I, too, like my predecessors, are now a new member of APHA thanks to this, and open my eyes to what's going on here. It also gives me an opportunity to renew my ties with my alma mater, Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, so I'll be visiting their booth later on after this session. My task today is to bring a state perspective on newborn screening. I also have no conflicts of interest to disclose, and I hope that at the end of my talk, you'll be able to describe how newborn screening is performed throughout the country, explain the current challenges as well as opportunities that the states face coming out of the previous 50 years and as we head into the next half a century or more, and then discuss how we use the tools that Dr. Cuthbert mentioned to ensure quality, as well as how expansions in health information technology are aiding us in information transfer and ensuring that quality I mentioned. So what I have here on the slide in front of you are federal mandates related to newborn screening. There are none. Newborn screening is a state-based program. As Dr. Cuthbert and Dr. McCabe mentioned, there are several guidelines. There are several recommendations, such as the recommended uniform screening panel that comes out of the Secretary of Health and Human Services, or out of Health and Human Services and that committee. But there are no federal mandates. And I'll get into how we make our decisions at each of the state's level. And what I hope to show you, and I've gotten a lot of slides from my colleagues around the country, is that while there are differences, there are similarities in that singular goal is protecting the health of that newborn. And so Dr. Cuthbert alluded to this, but that the newborn screening is not a program. It is not an individual. It's an entire system. And at the state level, the center of that system is the baby. I don't have a pointer with me, but the green circle you see is sort of what we call at our state level the newborn screening program. You have the baby at the center, you have the specimen collection at the hospital, you have laboratory testing, you have reporting, you have education. But this whole system that encompasses the federal level, the advocacy groups like the March of Dimes, specialty groups, heck, even the military, they do have babies in the military, it's a huge system that we have to go through with newborn screening. But the key components of that circle in the center of that program maintain from state to state, and that's education throughout the entire process, starting with the OBs and all the way through to the parents who end up having that child. Education of our staff and the laboratory follow-up programs, subspecialty groups, etc. Screening, including the actual specimen collection, that dry blood spot that's collected, or in the case of critical congenital heart defects, the performance of pulse oximetry or hearing testing. Follow-up and result reporting. So we're lucky that 97% of the babies born in this country go home with a normal result. Of that 3% with an abnormal result, only about 10% of those children actually have a known or a perceived defect, a deficiency. And so that ends up being about 12,000 babies out of the 4 million babies born each year that have a newborn screening disorder that we detect. And so all those results need to be followed up, and those babies linked to diagnostic confirmation and management. And ultimately, the entire system, not just the newborn screening program, goes through a process of evaluation and continuous quality improvement, or CQI. Now, Dr. Cuthbert mentioned the baby's first test and new steps, and sort of this slide is a little difficult to see, and I thank my colleague Marcy Sontag for putting this together. But it sort of shows in the center of that newborn screening program, that state program, that overlaps the birth, the actual screening process, and a little bit of the diagnostic process, and where each of these federal partners that we deal with, and like I said, like Dr. Cuthbert said, that we have a lot of partners at many levels, well beyond the ones you see here, to ensure that we meet our goals. And just a couple snapshots. The top left is from the Texas Newborn Screening Lab and the volumes of babies that they test every day. And those are the dry blood spots on the left side. And on the right top is the hearing screening, and the right bottom is the pulse oximetry screening for critical congenital heart defects. One of the most commonly asked questions, and it's been alluded to a little bit, is why do we screen for what we screen for? What's the panel that we get? And it has a long history that I won't get into in terms of the federal reports, but there was an understanding and a recognition that the states were differing significantly in their panels. New Jersey, the state that I represent, was one of those lightly shaded states in Dr. McCabe's earlier map, and when I came in, one of the tasks that I had was to bring us up current with sort of standards. But the disorders come from, well, historically, HRSA funded the ACMG, the American College of Medical Genetics, to put together a report on a recommended uniform screening panel, which then translated over to the Secretary's Advisory Committee, who came up with the RUSP. Now, as I said, these aren't federal mandates, these are recommendations. So each state has their own advisory panel. In New Jersey, it's called the NJNSARC, or Newborn Screening Advisory and Review Committee. So they take what the RUSP has to say, as well as what's going on in New Jersey. Is there something that happens in New Jersey that maybe we want to screen for that isn't recommended nationally? And this is a very similar pattern to what happens across the country. And they make recommendations to our Commissioner of Health. And in New Jersey, it's his or her responsibility to recommend add tests to our newborn screening panel. And that's typically how it's functioned throughout the years. More recently, though, the legislatures have gotten involved. And this is one of the challenges I'll mention later, where legislatures are being bombarded by advocacy groups to add tests, sometimes prior to the completion of scientific evidence review, which is what the Secretary's Advisory Committee tends to oversee. And then the state labs and state programs are forced to bring these on prior to being ready for prime time. So you have a patchwork of laws across the country. This is actually New York's PKU law. New York began screening in 1965, and this is their law. And so each state has some sort of statutory authority through newborn screening laws, and that leads down to regulatory. And here's our New Jersey newborn screening reg and the responsibilities of this system, as I mentioned. So you've got the CEO of the hospital, or those babies who aren't born in the hospital. There's birth attendants, midwives, are responsible for ensuring the newborn screening is performed as well. The physicians, home health agencies, public health officer. We reach out to local public health. If we can't find a baby that has an abnormal screening result, we need the help of the system to find this child and get them into care. The testing laboratory, the follow-up program, the department, and as always, there are exemptions to the rule. But it leads to what you see here, which is New Jersey's path over the last 50 years, from our one disorder in 1964 PKU up to where we currently sit, 54 disorders, including the big jump in the early 2000s with the addition of tandem mass spectrometry. As I'll mention later, technology tends to drive advances, and in the early 2000s, we had this explosive technology, tandem mass spectrometry, which allowed us to test a single blood spot for several dozen disorders in one shot. And those were the fatty acid oxidation disorders, the organic acidemias, the urea cycle disorders. And that technology is still being used to expand into some of the disorders I'll talk about now. Basically, the process, and I'm going to summarize it in one quick slide, is in a biochemical testing laboratory, such as the one I run, we get specimens in by overnight service. We go through the mail, make sure the spots look good, punch these spots. There are 1/8 inch or 3.2 millimeter punches into these wells of 96 well plates. And here's another slide was provided by the Texas laboratory. Those plates then spread out across the laboratory to test for however many disorders that we screen for. New Jersey, like I said, it's 54, soon to be 55 with the addition of SCID. And this process runs, I would say, fairly seamlessly across the country. In New Jersey, we get about 400 to 500 samples a day. Specimens come in today. Tomorrow, we'll report out just about all the normals. Maybe another extra day for abnormals. Turnaround time is 24 to 48 hours. I think it's a pretty flowing system. The follow-up of abnormals is as complex as this slide looks, because nothing is simple. And every day we're in newborn screening, something new comes up, I find. And so, but ensuring at the end that an abnormal result in the laboratory, or even with hearing or CCHD, is followed up by a medical professional is the goal here. And that's what we see with this sample follow-up flow. So why speak at APHA? I mean, what does this have to do with public health? Well, what hasn't been mentioned yet is that 2 years ago, in this edition of the MMWR, the CDC named newborn screening one of the 10 great public health achievements of the first decade of this century. We screen 4 million babies a year in this country. 12,000 of them have a very different life thanks to newborn screening. They are alive, or they have a significant quality of life thanks to this program. And that was acknowledged by this article. In New Jersey alone, in the first 48 years of our program, almost 6,000 babies were identified with a biochemical and genetic disorder. In the short time that hearing's been around, hearing screening's been around, over 1,100 babies have been identified with hearing loss who did not pass their newborn hearing screening. And CCHD, and I think by law obligated to tell you, New Jersey was the first state in the country to screen for critical congenital heart defects. We've identified, I think the number's up to four now, this year, four babies with a defect that was previously unsuspected. So these babies had no signs or symptoms of, outward signs or symptoms of a critical congenital heart defect, but had a life-threatening heart defect that was repaired in the first week of life thanks to this screen. In fact, the very first baby picked up by pulse oximetry screening in New Jersey was the very first day that we mandated screening in the state. And it's a very interesting story across the country that we're finding, not only with CCHD screening, but even biochemical screening. It's happening where a baby with SCID will be picked up in the first week or the first month of screening. It's sometimes, on one hand, scary to think about how many might we be missing, and gives you that impetus to get this up and running so that we do find these children and dramatically change their lives as well as their families' lives. But where do we go? I mentioned new technology changes things. There's game changers. And the top left, the top right I'll start with, because it's actually not new technology. That's a real-time PCR machine. And real-time PCR has been around for a long time, technology speaking, a long time. But it's really getting its show in newborn screening now as we add severe combined immune deficiency and a variety of other sort of simpler genetic techniques. On the bottom is a microfluidics assay where you can actually pick up a variety of disorders with a micro drop of specimen, and this is allowing us to multiplex technology, screen for multiple disorders in one small shot. The top left is actually, for some people, a very scary instrument, for other people, an opportunity, and that's a whole genome sequencer. Dr. McCabe showed a slide of a very large sequencing instrument. This is basically the size of a large color printer now, and can sequence entire genes in one shot. Now the cost is down to about $700. And that's what NIH is funding. How can this impact newborn screening? I mean, the reality is it's a very powerful tool. And our genetic metabolism doctors use it to pick up mutations in the babies that we find. We screen for phenotype. We look for babies who are lacking an enzyme. We look for babies who can't process proteins, who don't produce hormones. The top left is a game changer. It changes you from looking from phenotype to now looking at genotype. And what does that mean? And so where we go with that will be not the next 50 years, but probably the next 10 years, as we see how that impacts newborn screening. And I believe Dr. Goldenberg is going to talk a little bit more about that. New disorders. So severe combined immune deficiency was recommended, added to the RUSP a few years ago. States are still adding it. New Jersey will be adding it early next year. Lysosomal storage disorders began in New York several years ago with the addition of Crab A. New Jersey, Missouri, and Illinois are in the process of adding five of our own lysosomal storage disorders. X-linked adrenoleukodystrophy was under review by the Secretary's Advisory Committee. That review was put on hold for some more data. That didn't stop Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey from passing laws mandating X-linked adrenoleukodystrophy disorder. And now on the horizon is potentially spinal muscular atrophy or a variety of other disorders that are being pursued. And we're getting now a little bit into some challenges. And always in any program is financial concerns. How do we pay for this expanded coverage? Okay. Newborn screening saves healthcare dollars. I mean, it's a fact. With SCID, and Dr. McCabe showed the advances in treatment saved morbidity. A baby identified in the first 3.5 months of life had a 96% survival. But it also saves about $1 million in healthcare costs. Okay. Newborn screening in New Jersey is $90 per specimen. What can you get for $90? You can even get an x-ray for $90, but I can tell you 54 disorders in one shot. So we're not talking a ton of money here, and the Newborn Screening that Saves Lives Act, Reauthorization Act, isn't a ton of money. It's just getting everybody together. But financial concerns is always the first. Personnel concerns. There are a lot of qualified people out there, but we can't hire anybody. There's a lot of hiring freezes still around the country, and that dovetails right into these financial concerns. Or if you can hire, you hire internally. So you take somebody from a program right down the hall from you. So it doesn't necessarily solve any problems. And then follow-up issues. There's a lack of subspecialists in the area. We're going to start looking for more genetic disorders, but there aren't a lot of clinical geneticists out there. So there are challenges. They're not insurmountable challenges, but there are challenges that we need to review. Public pressure to expand screening, adding screen disorders before they've really gone through a complete scientific review, system integration, privacy concerns, and Mother Nature. As you might recall, we had a hurricane in New Jersey last year that we did rise up against. We were stronger than the storm, if I can quote my governor. And I'll close out real quick with ensuring quality. We rely heavily on these programs. While we are state-based, ensuring that quality nationally, which is Dr. Cuthbert's job, and her staff's job on the left there with the Newborn Screening Quality Assurance Program, the program at APHL, and New Steps, which Dr. McCabe mentioned I do chair the steering committee for. New Steps is a national newborn screening sort of quality improvement, quality monitoring, technical assistance program whose mission is to achieve the highest quality for the entire newborn screening system and provides tools for that, one of which recently opened is the New Steps data repository, where states can add in their data and sort of identify trends, compare ourselves to each other, see, okay, well, New York is doing this better than me. Let me call up New York and see how I improve. We might be state-based, but we're very collaborative. As you saw, I have slides from many of my colleagues who understand that this is not a competition. If we compete, the only person who loses is that baby that we're trying to screen. And I'll close out with just information technology. As we're now trying to bring everything together, in New Jersey, we're adding what's called the Vital Information Platform, which is an electronic birth certificate, from the electronic birth certificate system to the electronic death certificate system, all in one. Immunization, screening. On the top there, you have metabolic screening, you have pulse ox screening, and you have hearing screening, all in one shot. Links all those records together so that we can more rapidly identify these babies. In Colorado, they've taken it a step further where they actually share results through a central data warehouse, so that doctors can bring these up more rapidly. It does present, as I mentioned, challenges to ensure that everything's together, but again, not insurmountable, and in the end, benefits everyone. I'll close out, like my predecessors in this session, with honoring the 50 years of newborn screening. We are celebrating ours in New Jersey next year, and nothing's possible without a team, and this is my wonderful team celebrating Newborn Screening Awareness Month in September. And so I thank everybody for your time and look forward to questions coming up.